Oh, it's the beginning of a new week once again. Can you believe it? How fast these weeks are just rolling by, one after the other. It's Monday, and it's another Blue Jackets Monday Mailbag, and I'm your host, Bob McElligott. Thanks for being here today. The Blue Jackets coming off a very busy week last week. Very, very busy week, as a matter of fact. Seemed like every day there was something going on. And for me, when there was a day with nothing going on, Blue Jackets, I did some high school state championship games. So, you know, you got to keep busy, right? 7 games, 7 days. That's okay. I can handle it this time of the year. If I'm not ready by now, I am never going to be ready. But it was a really busy week, and it was a week that was highlighted by the trade deadline. And the Blue Jackets were a little bit active at the trade deadline. The Blue Jackets did exactly what we thought they would do at the trade deadline, take care of the business that they had to take care of. But let's go a step further. Let's just go all the way back through the year and go through all of the trades that the Blue Jackets made. Because do you remember that the first trade was made back in early December when Eric Robinson was sent to the Buffalo Sabres? You may have forgotten about that. Well, I didn't. So he was sent there for a conditional 7th-round pick. And then there was the other trade, which happened in late February, when Emil Bemström went to the Pittsburgh Penguins for Alex Nylander and a conditional draft pick. And then trade deadline day came on Friday. And that's when the Blue Jackets made the moves that they felt that they had to make. First of all, they got goaltender Malcolm Subban from the St. Louis Blues in exchange for future considerations. What does that mean? Oh, who knows? We'll find out in the future, right? But they got Subban. They sent him to Cleveland to help to fortify that team as they get ready for a playoff run. And then Andrew Peak was sent to the Boston Bruins, and that is a big trade for Andrew Peak, a guy that didn't get to play very much this year. When he did play, I thought he did well, but he just couldn't stay in the lineup. So Jakub Zboril comes back the other way. He was playing in Providence in the American Hockey League. He goes to Cleveland to help out the Monsters. Also a 2027 third-round pick in that deal. And the final trade of the day, the only unrestricted free agent the Blue Jackets had on the roster was Jack Roslovic. Pending unrestricted free agent, Roslovic was sent to the New York Rangers in exchange for a conditional 2026 fourth-round pick. So those were the trades that the Blue Jackets did on trade deadline day. And again, there wasn't a lot going on. There could have been more, perhaps, but there's no general manager here right now. And president of hockey operations John Davidson made it clear that the business that was done on Friday is exactly what he thought this team needed to do.
You need 5 goalies in the organization. We essentially had 4 after we lost Spencer Martin. So we added Subban as depth. And he's good. And it's going to help Cleveland in case of. With Peaker, we've got a surplus of defensemen. We have people coming. So we're making room. And another good man that's worked his tail off. And then Jack's going to the Rangers. Expiring contract. It's something we just had to do, and he's going to do very well.
So that's President of Hockey Operations John Davidson talking about the moves that the Blue Jackets made on trade deadline day. Again, not really any surprises there. JD was quoted in other articles, and I think he said it in – well, no, I know he said it in this press conference. There were other things that teams called about and other deals that could have been done, but without having a general manager, he didn't feel that this was the time to go into – any kind of a bigger deal. That is something that is to be left for the next general manager of the Blue Jackets, and that's a wise choice, right? Because you don't want to stick somebody with something that you did over a span of a couple of months when you didn't have a GM. So let them come in and evaluate, because there's no need to do anything really quickly. You don't have to panic button push over a Boone Jenner or an Elvis Merzlikins or anything like that right now. These are conversations that a new general manager can have with the other GMs in the league over the summer and then decide what direction to go. Let the new general manager assess the talent from their viewpoint, figure out what they have, what they need, what they want, and then have those kind of conversations. And that's exactly what the Blue Jackets did. So trade deadline day comes and goes. Blue Jackets, a lot of games this week. A lot of games this week that they had. And they had some impressive home victories. It all started on Monday of last week when they got that big win over the Vegas Golden Knights, the defending Stanley Cup champs. The Blue Jackets really just controlled that game, controlled the game throughout, and took care of business. Went to Pittsburgh the next night, had another disappointing game in Pittsburgh, put that on the long list of disappointing games that have taken place for the Blue Jackets in Pittsburgh. Essentially, let's be honest here, the Blue Jackets gave the Penguins two of their goals. And when I say gave, that's not fair. I mean, Eric Gudbranson's trying to clear a puck from the side of the net on the penalty kill. He takes the puck and he tries to just fire it all the way up the ice, and it hits off the shin pad of Rickard Rakell, and it gets in behind Jet Greaves, who had made the start in goal. So that was one of them. The other one, Andrew Peak, is trying to block a pass that the Penguins are trying to make across the seam, and the puck goes off his foot and it gets behind Greaves. So the Blue Jackets lose that game in Pittsburgh, and it's a disappointing one. Then they come back and they have to play against the Edmonton Oilers. And you're thinking, well, you know, Monday, that win against Vegas, that was nice. And Tuesday, that stunk. And now you've got Edmonton, and I don't know how this one sets up. Edmonton won the first game of the season series 4-1, but yet the Blue Jackets were able to shut down Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers and pick up another huge home victory. That was on Thursday. Saturday, Nashville comes in, and the Blue Jackets can't get their offense going for three quarters of the opening period of the game. They finally get a shot on goal 15 minutes and 16 seconds into the opening period. Then they get a bunch of shots on goal, but they end up losing that game to the Predators 2-1. Kevin Lankinen, starting goaltender for Nashville on Saturday afternoon, was just terrific. I mean, sometimes you just have to tip your cap to the goaltender and say, he's the difference in the game. And that was it on Saturday. That was the difference in the game. It was a slow start, but once they got going with the number of shots that they put on net, they, you know, could have been able to win that game if the goaltending wasn't as good as Lankinen brought on Saturday. Speaking of goaltending, Blue Jackets have gotten some terrific performances this week out of Daniil Tarasov. Tarasov got the win against Vegas. He got the win against the Oilers, and he did not win against the Nashville Predators. But in that first period, when the Blue Jackets were being outshot at 1:19-0, that game could have been 4 or 5-0 in the first period had Tarasov not been as solid as he was. So the goaltending situation is going to be interesting to me the last part of the season, because after the game, Pascal Vincent was asked how he was going to handle the goaltenders the rest of the way, and if they would just be alternating or whatever, you know, how would he approach it? Without saying who you're going to start every game, how are you going to approach it? And his answer to me was interesting, because he said, you know, Daniil has been playing very well. He deserves to get starts. He also said Elvis has been playing well, and Elvis was unavailable for the game on Monday and Tuesday because after he got the win in Chicago the previous Saturday, he was out of the lineup with some bumps and bruises. So he wasn't available Monday or Tuesday. He was back and available for the other games. But Pascal said that Elvis will get the start tomorrow night in Montreal because he deserves to start. And then from there, I'm not sure how they're going to handle it. I don't know if they're going to go with the hot hand. I don't know if they're going to try to tilt the remaining games in favor of Tarasov to see if he can stay on this little run that he's on right now. Either of those two things wouldn't surprise me. But I do suspect that with Tarasov now playing at a much higher level than he was earlier in the year, that he may get a serious look the rest of the way here. And why wouldn't you consider giving him a serious look? Because you don't really know what the future is with Elvis, and you do need to know with Daniil Tarasov. We talked about this earlier in the season. Remember when Tarasov was making all those starts, and of course that's when Elvis, you know, got upset because he wasn't starting, and he said he's not a backup and all that stuff. And then he calmed down over that, and he just started playing some really good hockey. You need two goaltenders. Well, as JD said, you need five goaltenders within the two teams, the American Hockey League team and the National Hockey League team. So you need everybody, quite frankly. But this is a situation where for Daniil Tarasov, when they put him in the net earlier this year, he was just coming off injury, and he hasn't played a lot in the last couple of years because of injury. And they put him in there, and they said, we need to see what he's going to be able to do and this and that. And what happened? Well, he was still very rusty. He probably would have benefited from going to the American Hockey League, but the way that things are set up by rules, they really couldn't do that and get exactly what they wanted. They wanted him to go down there for a while and get, you know, reacclimated and then bring him back. But by rule, they couldn't do that. They could only send him for short periods of time or a short period of time, whatever it was. So they had to kind of wait for him. And now he's obviously feeling much better. Now he's much more locked in. And I think based on what we saw this week, we may see a little bit more, maybe a lot more, of Daniil Tarasov between now and the end of the season. So we'll have to see how they handle all of that. But as I said, Elvis is to start tomorrow night in Montreal, and we'll go from there and see, you know, who, if any one of them, or if either one of them, not any one of them, either one of them ends up getting a little bit more playing time than the other one down the stretch. So that's where it all stands. The Blue Jackets did call up Carson Meyer from the American Hockey League. Oh, that's in addition to Trey Fix-Wolanski, who got called up before Saturday's game. Fix-Wolanski got a chance to get in and get some real minutes. And I think this is a great opportunity for him, probably the best opportunity he's had since being in the Blue Jackets organization and coming up to the National Hockey League. Because Jack Roslovic goes to New York. Jack had been playing on the right side of the top line with Johnny Gaudreau and Boone Jenner. And now there's a hole there. Who's going to fill that hole? Now, Trey Fix-Wolanski is playing top line in Cleveland. He's the top number three scorer in the American Hockey League when he leaves. Could you put him right on that line? Yeah, you could, but they didn't. And I'm okay with that because they also didn't put him on the fourth line and just limit him to those minutes. They moved Igor Chinnikov to the top line to play with Johnny Gaudreau and Boone Jenner. Makes plenty of sense. We'd seen it before this year, so no problem with that whatsoever. Fix-Wolanski went in on that line with Voronkov and Marchenko, which is a good opportunity for him. It's a really good opportunity for him. Now, he benefits getting to go there partly because the line of Cole Sillinger, Alexander Texier, and Alex Nylander has been so good over the course of the last week and a half to 2 weeks. So, with that being set, and with the fourth line, Justin Danforth couldn't play the other day. So the Blue Jackets had to play a man short. They had only 11 forwards, and that's why they called Carson Meyer up from Cleveland so they can get back to the full complement of forwards here if Danforth still can't go tomorrow or Thursday or whatever. So they bring Carson Meyer up. But, again, Trey Fix-Wolanski gets an opportunity to play higher than the fourth line in the lineup. And I've told you this before, and I'll say it to you again right now. Sometimes it's unfair because you're playing top line in the American League. You come to the National League and you play on the fourth line and your minutes go from 24 a game to 8. And then when you don't do the same within the 8 minutes as you do in the 24 minutes down there, it kind of looks like, well, how come this guy can score there? How come he can do so well there and he can't do well up here? Well, it's a totally different role. It's not even the same. You're not a top line winger who's looking to who they're looking for to put a lot of pucks in the net. Now you're a fourth-line grinder who they're looking to play defense and keep pucks out of the net. So, you know, sometimes it's really tough. There's a real special mindset sometimes that you have to put into play as a player when you're coming from the American Hockey League to the National Hockey League. But anyway, Trey Fix-Wolanski, I thought he played well the other day. And you know, he brought energy. That's the thing with him. That when Pascal Vincent was asked about him, he wants to see his energy. And we did see that on Saturday. So we'll continue to see it, I'm sure, tomorrow in Montreal. Look, Trey Fix-Wolanski is not going to back off. He knows. If I'm telling you this is his best opportunity since he's been here, he is well aware of this being his best opportunity since he's been here in this organization. So he's going to bring it night in and night out. That's the kind of player that he is. Well, if you're with me on Twitter Spaces live and you have a question for me, all you have to do is request to be a speaker. I'll bring you on. Some of you have already sent your questions to me via Twitter or X. It's X. But anyway, at Bobby Mac Sports is where you can find me there. Peter Clavin says, thoughts on Yarmo scouting for us in the future. In 10 years of drafting, he wasn't able to draft a superstar or even a single power play guy. I think he's an overrated drafter. When you look around the league, every other team has been able to draft a power play guy in that time frame except us. Obviously, superstars aren't the end-all be-all to drafting, but I think top-end talent is one thing that's held this franchise back. Well, Peter, Zach Werenski's here, right? He's a power play guy. Adam Fantilli is a power play guy and a superstar, budding superstar. And if you say to me, well, that's a slam dunk. He was number three. And you didn't even really have to make a choice because Chicago and Anaheim made the choice for you. No, I still wouldn't even go with that. So what kind of a power play guy are you looking for? I mean, the power play is – look, the power play here has struggled for a long time. And when you look around the league – like, I look at Pittsburgh. Their power play this year is terrible. Terrible. And they can put Crosby and Malkin and Letang and Carlson all out on the power play. They can put them all on the same unit if they want to. And they can't get it to work. So I don't know what you're looking for with a power play guy specifically. I mean, you know, Patrick Laine should be a power play guy. He traded to get him. And he hasn't worked out very well on it. So I look, my thoughts on Yarmo's scouting for this team. Right now, he's under contract. He still has a contract. So if they would ask him to do something, I would feel that, you know, they would be within their rights to ask him to do something, I guess, because they're still paying him. But that being said, he's not going to be a big part of this organization. You know, maybe they would ask him for an opinion on something or ask him to go see somebody. But, he's not going to have that ability and that voice to be the general manager like he was. So I'm a little bit confused by this whole thing that you're asking here. But I thought he's drafted pretty well. Yegor Chinnikov, even the people on the TV broadcast during that draft, they had no idea who he was. He's turning out to be a pretty good doggone player, right? Kirill Marchenko, what was he, a second-round pick? He's turning out to be pretty good. Dmitry Voronkov, what was he, a fourth? A lot of potential there. So, you know, you talk about a power play guy, but how about depth and getting, you know, building depth within the organization? Now, I think he's been good at drafting. Team building is a different story, and that's why this team is in the situation it's in right now. You can acquire a whole bunch of pieces, but if the pieces don't interlock, then you run into trouble. And that's where we are. We've run into trouble because there's a lot of good pieces, and they don't necessarily interlock. You know, Kent Johnson could be a good power play guy, potentially will be a good power play guy. So, anyway, that's where I'm at. What did Peter write back? Point per game players. So, anyway, Kent Johnson has the potential to be that. Fantilli has the potential to be that. I think he's drafted well. And it's not just the first-round guys, right? It's the guys further down. The teams that are more successful are the ones that draft better when they get further down in the draft. JT says, given the great defensive performance of the Blue Jackets against the Oilers, what did you see differently as it compared to the game against the Predators? Well, number one, I saw an afternoon game where the Blue Jackets just didn't have the motor going right away. I don't know if it was because of time of day. I don't know if it was because it was a busy week. I don't know if it was because the Nashville Predators are just doggone hungry and trying to make sure that they keep their wild card spot in the Western Conference. I think maybe it's a combination of all those things. But, look, every team's different. And I know it's easy to say, well, how do you shut down Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and yet you lose to Nashville, you don't have the same. Look, the game was 2-1, right? I mean, really. It's a one-goal game. It's a tight game. It's not like they played a bad game. They didn't get the offense going early enough, but it wasn't a bad game. They played it well. So the difference was there were a couple of goals that were scored. Nashville's fourth line scored a goal in the first period. And then their second line scored a goal in the third period, and that's a difference in the game. I mean, it wasn't 5-1 or, you know, 6-0 or anything like that. So defensively, I thought it was fine. I told you Tarasov, it could have been 6-0. It could have been that in the first period if Tarasov wouldn't have been on his game. But he was on his game, and that turned into a nothing burger when it came to that. But you know, it wasn't that different. It really wasn't that different. Low scoring game. So defensively, and goaltending wise. That's what it was. It was lack of scoring in that game is why you lose that game. It's not the defense. 2-1, it's not the defense. Simple as that. Again, if you're with me on X Spaces and you want to ask a question, all you have to do is request to be a speaker. And I'll bring you up and you can ask your question. Otherwise, you can send me your question on X, and you can do that by sending it to me at Bobby Mac Sports. So this week, Blue Jackets heading to Montreal to play tomorrow night against the Canadiens. The Canadiens, they made moves at the deadline. The big move they made, they traded Jake Allen, and they sent him to the New Jersey Devils. You know, the Devils kind of, I don't know if I should say it surprised me. I guess I should say that because it did. They totally overhauled their goaltending. Totally overhauled it. Traded Vitek Vanacek out, brought Jake Allen in. So they made some moves. Montreal also sent Sean Monahan to the Winnipeg Jets. That's a big deal. That's a major trade. So the Blue Jackets won't have to deal with Monahan when they play in Montreal tomorrow. But the Montreal Canadiens, you know, they're in a situation similar to the Blue Jackets. They're rebuilding, they're trying to get better, and kind of doing it one step at a time as they can. Let me go back to that jersey thing and how they changed everything. So they bring in Jake Allen, and what did that cost them? That cost them a conditional 2025 third-round pick. And that guy has term on his contract, right? I think he has another year on his contract. And then they send Vitek Vanacek to San Jose for Kaapo Kähkönen. And, Vanacek and a seventh-round pick, and they get Kähkönen back. So they revamped their goaltending situation. Jake Allen, Kaapo Kähkönen are now the goalie tandem for the New Jersey Devils. And for the Devils, you know, it's pretty obvious what they felt was I was going to say holding them back, but that's not fair to say because their goaltending wasn't good enough. I've never thought their goaltending has been good enough. And I think it's better now with that, but is it still, I mean, who knows? Is it going to be enough? But here's the thing for New Jersey. No matter what, coming into play today, New Jersey is still 6 points out of a playoff spot. They're still 6 points behind the Islanders, who have the final wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, they need to win some games. So they changed the goaltending tandem. They hope that helps them to win some games. But let's be honest, they are really hurt by Dougie Hamilton being out of their lineup. And from last year to this year, you've lost Ryan Graves. He went to Pittsburgh. Damon Severson, who's now here. And now Dougie Hamilton is hurt. That's a lot of experience to replace on the blue line for the New Jersey Devils. So you can talk about their goaltending, but their defense goes right in there as well. It's the very same thing. So very interesting the way the playoff races are shaping up, especially in the East, because you know now you've got Detroit. They've had a bit of a tough week, right? Dylan Larkin gets hurt, and now they've dropped some games. They're tied with the Islanders, but the Islanders have the tiebreaker, so that's why they're in a playoff spot. You know, Tampa's right there in front of the Islanders. Tampa's got 74 points. The Islanders and Red Wings each have 72. The Capitals are only 5 points behind the Lightning and only 3 points behind the New York Islanders. How about that? The Capitals really, right now, they're 3 points ahead of the Devils. Who'd have thunk it? So very interesting how it's sizing up in the East. And to take it a step further, the Capitals are only 5 points behind the Flyers. Flyers hanging on there in the third spot in the Eastern Conference. So that's the way it's shaping up right now. Still a long way to go. Donald is going to be first up here live on X Spaces today as part of the Monday Mailbag. Hello, Donald.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I missed the first 5 minutes. Did you go over the trades and what you thought about the Roslovic and Peak trades?
Yeah, I went over them, and I thought they were good. I just thought they did what they had to do, right? Andrew Peak's not playing. You got to get something for these guys. They got rid of Peak's contract and didn't have to take any of it back, so that's a win, right? You get a conditional pick. You get rid of 2 more years of $3 million a year for Andrew Peak. You make room for some of the younger guys that are going to be coming and pushing on the blue line. So that's a win. And the Jack Roslovic thing, it was well known that he wasn't coming back regardless. So take whatever you can get. And for him, he gets a chance to go to New York and play with the Rangers, who, you know, might find their way all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Who knows? So good for Jack. And he was playing really well the last couple of weeks. Give him credit. He really was playing some really good hockey. But they had to do it. They did exactly what they had to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, there's a lot of people. I know how Twitter and online can be, but the people complaining that, oh, we got nothing, we might as well just let him go, I think they're just, they don't understand the reality of the business.
Right. And how do you know you have nothing? You don't know you have nothing until you make the draft pick, right, and then see what they turn into, right? And Jacks can, it can, the draft pick can get better depending on what happens there. So that's short-sighted and stupid, quite frankly.
For sure.
And for Andrew Peak, they also got a defenseman they can send to Cleveland and help them in a playoff run, because that's important to them. And, you know, they can't send Kent Johnson now because he's hurt. Adam Fantilli's hurt. They couldn't put him on the Cleveland roster to go to the playoffs. So that's some great firepower that the Monsters would have had that they're not going to have now. So beef up the defense and the goaltending, and that's exactly what they did for them.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of Fantilli, they keep saying the injury could have been worse, and I guess I believe that. But the fact that he's still in the boot is, I mean – do you have any updates for us? That just seems like it's taking forever for a cut to heal, you know?
Well, it's a cut. It's a bad cut, though. What they're saying, how it could have been worse, is it could have caught the Achilles tendon. And if that happens, now we're talking months, right? We're not talking 8 weeks. We're probably talking 8 months. And as a rookie, and then at the beginning of your career that happens, that's not great. Look at Max Pacioretty. He's an older guy. I get it before I say this. But he had that injury twice in a row, right? And it's missed a ton of hockey over the last 3 years. So it could have been much worse. He's still in the boot. Some of that probably at this point is probably still precautionary. But, like if it was me and I hated wearing the boot, but they said if you wear the boot, then you're probably coming back in 8 weeks. And if you don't wear the boot, it's going to be 10. I'd wear the boot. So look, he was healthy enough to go to the Cavs game yesterday, right?
Yeah, I saw that. And, you know, it's just weird to see a boot for a cut, but I get the precautionary stuff.
Well, but a cut with, tendons and stuff and ligaments back there too. I mean, it's not like he got scraped. He got stepped on with a razor blade, right? So it went through some stuff, obviously, because if it was a superficial wound, it would have been maybe a couple of games and then he would have been back in there. So there were things damaged, but what could have been a year-long injury didn't get touched. So that's the point of it.
Yeah, that's fair. Right. Well, before I let you go, I want to say thanks for sending that cameo to my daughter.
How'd she like it? Did it work? Did it work? That's all I care. Did it work?
It was fantastic. Her mouth dropped. I showed it to her after school. She had a bad day at school and we were about to go to the tournament. And I showed it to her and she just lit up and she did really well at the tournament. We got runner up. We went to the final game and nobody expected us to make it that far. So she did great and we really appreciated it.
Well, you tell her I'm proud of her and I'm happy and I'm glad it worked out. And I love how you just said she had a bad day at school and it brightened her day. That really makes me feel good. Thank you.
No, it was great. Thanks again, Bob.
All right, Donald. All right. We'll talk to you probably next week. I would say probably a good chance of that. Speaking of talking to from week to week, let me get this set up, and there, now it is set up. Lester, welcome to the Monday Mailbag. How are you?
Not bad. Hey, I'm glad to see that you survived the McGilligan to Ottawa for four interns to be named later rumor.
Oh, man, yeah, I sure did. I don't want to go there anyway. Jeez.
Think about it. If the trade had gone down, you'd gotten back in time Thursday for your tribute video.
That's true. You know, I probably would have just requested to sit out until Thursday.
Yeah, that would have been the move. Yeah. A couple of thoughts about what you've said. About Saturday's game, not only did they show up 15 minutes late, but once Nashville got the lead in the third period, they just kind of clogged the neutral zone with all five of their players, and they kind of dared us to bring that puck up the ice to the neutral zone, and we really struggled to do it.
That was like old Barry Trotz coaching hockey, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I mean, they didn't even have a guy back by the goalie. They just kind of stacked that neutral zone and said, have at it, boys. And we just couldn't do it. We just couldn't. I sat there and watched that, and I thought, barring a miracle, we are not going to score, and we did not. That's where we would have missed a Roslovic, or maybe even more so Danforth. I think if he'd been out there, I think it would have been a different story, but there's nothing you can do about it. You just move on. About the East playoff race, Washington begins a five-game swing through Western Canada this week. Yes, I said five because Winnipeg's included in it. Then they got to come back and play Toronto twice.
Huh.
So nice I can scheduling. See them. Yes, I can see them not really hanging around. And then the Islanders have to play the Rangers three times yet. And I have a feeling that Philadelphia is going to hang on to a spot and Tampa will. And I just think if it's between Washington, the Islanders, and Detroit for that last spot, I just think somehow, some way, Detroit is going to hang on to that last spot, especially if they get Larkin back.
Any opening for the Devils to get hot and get back in there?
I really don't think so. I don't think so. I think this is just one of those years you just kind of got to write it off. Nothing went right.
Yeah, and sometimes that happens, right? I mean, teams make the playoffs, and then they think, and they beat the Rangers last year, so you think maybe it comes easy, and then there's personnel changes, and then you have injuries, and then all of a sudden you get to this time of the year, and you're saying, what the heck happened? But it's happened before. A team has made the playoffs, and then the next year they don't make the playoffs, which usually sets them up to have a bigger resolve the next year to get it right and go even further.
Well, you know, one thing that I've learned, and I didn't used to think about this so much in the past, just because a guy's out there every day does not mean he's 100%. You might play 82 games.
Oh, no, there's not even close. You're absolutely right about that.
Right. That's the thing. I appreciate that Ivan Provorov has only missed three games in his career, and I do like him. I said that last week. But the fact is he has taken some hard shots this year. I've seen him have to leave the ice a couple of times. And I have to wonder if he's out there at times just not playing at 100%. And that's an issue. And I think New Jersey has had a lot of guys hurt this year. Hughes has kind of been through the ringer this year. It sure is. I mean, I think they're doing the right thing. They want to go out there and they want to help their team get better. They want to help their team get into the playoffs. But they might not be at 100%. And because they're not able to bring it like they really would, should, or could.
Yeah, it happens. There's no doubt about it. And you're right. At this time of the year, every team is going through it where most guys are not playing at 100%, especially when the schedule gets as busy as it has, and it happens for everybody. You know, I want to go back to what you were talking about, Washington having to make that Western Canada swing now. I don't get it. And maybe making the schedule is extremely hard, okay? And I'm sure there are some elements that make it hard. But why are there so many long trips at this time of the year? I mean, we're talking about, what is today, the 11th of March. So you've got essentially 5 weeks left in the season. Why are you still taking these long trips out to play against the other conference? Why are you not trying to get the conferences going head-to-head right now to build up toward the playoffs? I mean, the Blue Jackets still have to go to Denver, Arizona, Vegas before it's all said and done. I don't get that. I don't understand that. What? Get back into your – it'd be nice to get back into your conferences by a certain period of time for the last month so that you can just, you know, maybe everybody beat up on everybody and make it an interesting run.
You know, I understand your angst about that, but I think one of the things that causes that problem is we don't really have we have like an odd number of teams right now in the sense that we're having to give up a couple of division games to fit in Seattle. And for me, the solution is to add two extra regular season games so that you're playing everybody in the West twice and you're playing your division as you should be. I mean, I agree with you. Down the stretch, teams in the Metro should be playing each other a lot. And yeah. We should also be going up against teams in the Atlantic fairly often, too. And you just try and get a lot of those Western Conference games out of the way by, you know, about the All-Star break and maybe have a few odd ones sprinkled in if you're not having to go clear across the country, like going to St. Louis or Dallas or Minnesota. But, yeah, I think you're 100% right on that. The schedule maker could do a better job, but the schedule maker could be being inhibited by the fact that they got to fit that Seattle thing in now that we've expanded the league to another team.
That Seattle thing drives me nuts because you're right. You could add two more games, but now if you're going to go and do that, Now you've got to go with the players' union and have to come to an agreement to add the two games. And I know that's been talked about. Okay, fine. But here's what I don't understand. Here's a much more simple fix than that. Take the two games out of the Atlantic Division. Why do you have to play Ottawa three times if you can play them twice? Right? I mean, so this year, for example, play the Blue Jackets played the Islanders three times this year and the Capitals three times this year. Okay, so how about instead of playing Ottawa three times this year, you play them twice this year? And how about instead of playing the Florida Panthers three times this year, you play them twice this year? There are your two games, and it's not going to have, well, I know the wild card's involved here, but I would rather have my four games apiece against each division rival than worry about playing the extra game against the other division in the Eastern Conference. I think that makes much more sense.
I 100% agree, but there's another school of thought there, and I think you're almost ready to go there, where if you get into a situation where you're in a playoff battle with Ottawa, you might be wishing you had that extra game with them, you know, just to be able to control your own destiny. But I agree for the
most
part.
Yeah, but if you're in it against Pittsburgh and all of a sudden you have three games against them, you don't have as much control over your own destiny. So, I mean, and that is there you're battling for top three spots. So, yeah, it could happen with Ottawa or Buffalo or Detroit. Right. But it's more likely to happen with the Islanders, the Penguins, or the Capitals, right?
Right. Yeah, you have a point. I agree. You're there. And I'm going to say one last thing, get out of here. I've really been impressed with Tarasov of late. He's been fantastic. We've had a role here over the last, I don't know, 10 or 12 games or whatever, where our starting goalie in most of those games has only given up two goals. If you go back to Anaheim where Tarasov got poked in the eye and he was flat on the ice and gave up a goal there. If he doesn't get hit in the eye, he probably makes that save. You don't bring Elvis in cold to give up two goals, and he probably winds up only giving up one goal in that game. He's been fantastic all week, and well, I'll tell you what, we're going to get into real goalie controversy here because I think he's fast claiming the job as the number one goalie here, and Elvis may not like it, but they can't have him sitting around as a malcontent. They're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with him eventually, whether it's buy out his contract or find somebody that will take him off their hands and retain maybe 50% of it. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're right on all points, but the only way they can get to that spot is by Tarasov to continue to be the guy that he's been in this last month, as you just said. And the only way that he can continue to be that guy is he's got to play more. And I think if he continues to play like he has been, I think he is going to play well, or he is going to play more, even if the other one does become a malcontent, to be honest. Because right. you have to know. This is where they were a couple of months ago. They wanted to know. They have to know if they're going to be able to rely on Daniil Tarasov game in and game out. So he's healthy right now. He's playing well right now. And I think they're going to give him the opportunities to see if he can sustain it. Despite how anybody else feels. Now, I might be wrong, but I think that's probably the approach that you want to take because you got a new general manager coming, and you want to give that person all the information that they can have before they make a big move like that in the summer.
That is correct. There are some guys, though, that if they think they're getting the short end of the straw, they're not going to say very much. They're going to be quiet. But Elvis is not one of those people. He is going to speak up, and he'll say something to the media, and then the guys up there in Canada jump all over it. Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, but, he did that last time, and he did it, and then he quickly quieted down, and then he just started playing. So I think, really, if you sit and think about it, you don't want to be perceived as a problem in any way, shape, or form. So maybe he'll just go through the rest of the year. And again, we'll see what happens. Maybe he ends up getting the bulk of the games. I have no idea. But if he doesn't, he would be better served just to be quiet, play the best that he can whenever he's in the game. And then you can talk to your agent after that and try to put pressure on to do something if you want to. But, you know, malcontents are guys that don't necessarily, people aren't looking for those kind of people very much. You know, why is John Gibson not moved in Anaheim? Besides just contract. I think there are other things there.
Yeah.
Personality things there. And that's what I'm saying. So just be quiet. Be quiet, do your job, and see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see if we can get some wins this week. There's some games there, Montreal, San Jose, Ottawa. Those are winnable games.
Every one of them.
And Winnipeg has not come here and won in 5 years. So there's some games this week that I think could be very interesting where we talk about getting on a roll. This week might be the chance to finish strong.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm all for that. Whereas last year I was tentative about it because I wanted one of those top three guys. This year, I think you should try to win as many as you can going down the stretch and just try to get something out of this, right? Something.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Hey, you have a great week. Good talking to you.
Thank you, Lester. To go a little bit further on that, win as much as you can because you're all under the microscope. Every one of you is under the microscope. Doesn't matter who you are because you don't have a new boss yet. You don't know who that new boss is going to be, and that includes coaches. You don't have a new boss. So make sure you're at your best when the new boss is selected. Troy, next up on the Monday Mailbag. Hello, Troy.
Hey, Bob. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Good. I am going to follow up on that point you were making about be on your best behavior before the new boss comes. And I think this is an interesting topic for discussion. I would like to know your thoughts of this personally. Everyone knows the salary cap is going up $4.5 million next year. As it sits, we have about a shade under $5 million of cap space that's like truly accessible. That's like excluding like Patrick Laine's contract on the player assistance program, XYZ. Then the Blue Jackets also have around $10 million in upcoming free agents coming off the books. And obviously, there's a ton of great young prospects here that I think we want to have a part of this team for the future. But the truth of the matter is you can't re-sign all of these pending free agents and not. And my question to you is, out of the upcoming free agents, which three are the most likely to get a contract under the new general manager?
You talk about young guys?
I'll list them for you, upcoming free agents. So we have Kent Johnson. We have Jake Bean. We have Alex Nylander. We have Yegor Chinnikov, Cole Sillinger, Kirill Marchenko, and Alexander Texier. Which three are most likely to get a new contract with the Blue Jackets, in your opinion?
Kent Johnson, Cole Sillinger, Yegor Chinnikov.
I have a similar group of players. I really think that Sillinger and Chinnikov are that kind of hybrid player that has a little bit of bite to their game. Sillinger more so than Chinnikov, but those two, I feel like they play like a little heavier opposed to the other players. And I think building forward, those are the two players that I'd love to get.
Yeah, and Marchenko is going to get one too. Jake Bean, Alexander Texier. I don't see either one of those necessarily in the future. Long term.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like with all these contracts, like at the end of the day, like in the salary cap era, it's tough because you have to outperform your AAV or not. And it's not that Alexander Texier and Jake Bean are bad players. It's just the AAV. You know what I'm saying?
Alexander Texier,
they're both pretty good players.
They are. Alexander Texier right now, let's say Sillinger's line is a third line for argument's sake, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He's playing on that line. But most of the year, he's been playing as a fourth line winger. So you can find another fourth line winger, and you can find it for a more reasonable cost. So that's why I say that with him. If he's going to be in the bottom six, if he's in the top six, we're having a different discussion here. But I don't see how he winds up in that top six. So, and we're projecting, you know, 2-3 years down the road here. So, for him, good player. Yes, he can play the game and all that stuff, but what you're talking about, you have to outperform your AAV. I don't know that he does that, so that's why he gets on my list. And Jake Bean, the same way, you're going to have Matejchuk coming in here. You know, Svozil, potentially another left-handed shot defenseman. There are guys coming, and, you know, Provorov has next year and then, might be gone after that or might be gone at the deadline next year. Severson is, you know, he's locked in here for a long time. So, yeah, it's just a matter of numbers to me. When I bring up those two, it's, you know, you look at the whole situation. Who's here? What are you going to have to pay? Who's coming? What are you going to have to pay? That's why I picked those guys.
Yeah, I had the same two guys up on the top for me. And then my third one would have been Marchenko. But I do agree. I'd like to have Kent Johnson and Marchenko at the end of the day.
Here's the thing. So this is the kind of stuff that's going to be interesting, because when a new general manager comes in, you know, mm-hmm. like Kent Johnson has, you know, skill oozing out of him, obviously, right?
Yeah.
But, what if a new general manager comes in and he looks around and he goes, yeah, he's got all that skill and I love that, but he's still not getting strong. He's still getting knocked around. He's still struggling to get it going here. And I want to have bigger guys on my team, quite frankly. I've got Johnny Gaudreau. He's a small guy with a lot of skill. I'm locked in on that for a long time. Okay, I've got that. Kent Johnson, what could we do something else? And could we make ourselves better if we put him into a deal? And I'm not saying they're going to do that, but I'm just saying that different people have different perspectives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally understand. And that's the truth, like, with why we're getting the new general manager in the first place, because the problem never was that we were lacking talent on the team. Like you said, it was a roster construction thing. It was never the Columbus Blue Jackets are lacking talent. I live in New York. I watch most of the games on the Blue Jackets broadcast on ESPN+ because it's not blacked out. But when they're playing versus the Islanders, Devils, or Rangers, I have to watch it on cable over here with their broadcast. And they always talk about how fun and we are to watch and how impressed they are. But they're just like, oh, they're inconsistent. But my goodness, the flashes that these players are having against these teams, the commentators and everyone are always impressed with us, you know?
Yes. Yeah, no, you're right, but it's roster construction. And JD has said that. Jody and I had him on the Inside Edge last week, and we talked about that specifically. You know, you can accumulate talent, and then you got to put it together. So the talent has been accumulated. It's not working together. So that's what they got to figure out. But look, they really like Marchenko, Voronkov, Chinnikov. I mean, the people that are here right now, and I would imagine people that will come in will like all those guys. Yeah, you like Kent Johnson. But, you know, maybe a Marchenko or a Johnson somewhere down the line, somebody else is going to see it a little bit differently or find that, hey, I can really get something that's going to fortify my team, and I'm going to have to it's going to be painful to have to get rid of one of these guys, but I can really get this piece that I feel that we need. So who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I totally understand. Thank you for taking my call and answering the questions.
Thank you for being on today, Troy. I appreciate it. Have yourself a good day. And a good week, because as Lester said, there's a lot of winnable games this week on the schedule for the Blue Jackets, and it all starts tomorrow night in Montreal. Blue Jackets and the Canadiens meeting for the final time this year. That's 7 o'clock face-off tomorrow night. Pre-game coverage starting at 6:30, both with me on the Blue Jackets radio network or on Bally Sports, and then the Blue Jackets will be back here to take on Ottawa, right, on Thursday. I'm back into that again. I'm like, I know what the next game is. Where are we going after that? What's happening after that? But it will be fast and furious the rest of the way. There's no doubt about that. So trade deadline is come and gone. Now it's about going out there and getting the job done. That's what the players and the coaches are going to attempt to do. And now for the management, they shift gears with the trade deadline being behind them. Now it's time to start looking at who will be the next general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. And as they make that search, the players and the coaches will be looking to impress whoever that person winds up being. So it's going to be fascinating. It really is. It is an exciting time here, I think. A really exciting time, because as we were just talking about, you have all of this talent. You got to find a way to put it together to make it consistent. I get it. But you have all this talent. You're going to have a new set of eyes overseeing this talent. Maybe somebody with the slightly different perspective, maybe a whole different perspective on what's going on here. So this is exciting. Like, it's not, to me, it's not like, well, you're playing out the string, you're not making the playoffs, whoa, 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 whoa. Not, it's not that. It's like, yeah, let's see what you really have here. And then let's see who comes in to manage what you really have here. That's what these last couple of weeks are all about. So thanks for being on with me today. Thanks for sending your questions. You can do that anytime on X, formerly known as Twitter, At Bobby Mac Sports is where you can find me there. And every Monday we get together and you can come live on X Spaces, just like several have done here today, and ask those questions. So I am going to head out. I did not finish packing yet, to be honest with you. So I've got to quickly get that done. And then I've got to get to the airport, go to Montreal. And I will talk to you from Montreal tomorrow night when the Blue Jackets take on the Canadiens. Till then, I'm Bob McElligott. So long.